up, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 203203. This is the Recuperation Edition here at the Caffeination. If you listened to the last episode, I'd like to apologize up front and personal for how bad I actually sounded on it. So, needless to say, when the different websites say, hey, which episode are you really proud of? Really proud of the fact that I did the episode, but not so much of the... Actually, the way it sounded. I really like the content. I've gotten some great feedback on some people who liked a little bit more of the ranting style. Well, I don't even know if I was necessarily a rant, but a little bit more of a longer exposition on different topics and everything like that. So we might be continuing to try that. Like I've said in the past, we like to try and morph the show into something that you would find even more enjoyable than the last. Every show that you've listened to, I strive to make the best show you've ever heard. So, of course, this is the Caffeination Podcast, found over at www.caffeination.com. That's CAFFINATION.com. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. You can find more of them over at techpodcasts.com. Speaking of that, you're actually going to hear a sounder from a... from a member of the Tech Podcast Network, the preview cast directly after our PodSafe music, if I have this all lined up. Yeah, directly after today's PodSafe music, which brings me to the fact that on today's show, you're going to hear any and all of the following little topics be strolled across your earlobes: recuperation, healing, MacBooks, humor, dentures, junk food, and the Super Bowl. Yeah, we have a fantastic, great show lined up for you today. Hopefully, you're going to enjoy everything that we got coming your way. We have a lot of interesting little topics to cover. We have a couple anniversaries to hit right in the beginning. I might want to say that right up front. We'd like to wish the Smurfs and the Lego Brick their 50th anniversary. Apparently, 50 years ago was a pretty productive time in creativity wise, because the Lego Brick was invented in the previous Monday, which, let me just get the date correct, because I've been messing this up all week. The 28th of January is the 50th anniversary of the Lego Brick, and the 29th was the 50th anniversary of the Smurfs. Now, if I'm correct here, I believe the Smurfs are French, and the Lego Bricks are, like, Swedish or something. I had all the stories linked up, and then I promptly lost them after the last show. So please bear with me. If I find something on that, I'm actually going to write a little article, a little juxtaposition of the two. Thought it would be kind of interesting, kind of fun, humorous. Also, tomorrow I'm going to actually be heading to this Philadelphia social media breakfast with Jeff Pulver. I have a little link up to that. And it's a real-time social networking and tagging event. There's going to be a whole bunch of interesting people from the Philadelphia tech scene. So you're going to probably get a blog post later on today, later on the 31st of January 2008. This, of course, being the 30th of January 2008. So you're going to get a little information on that. I'm going to actually have my camera charging upstairs, a whole bunch of great stuff in line for that. So you're going to get to see a little bit more into the different interesting and local scenes, at least for me. And hopefully, you know, whenever Jeff comes to your neck of the woods, you might want to check out his blog. By the way, I have it linked up there. That is, actually, let me just make sure I have that correct. That is the pulverblog.pulver.com. You will see when he's going to be in your neck of the woods, all about social media, all about networking and making sure you get the right connections and you get out there and just enhance everybody's and enhance the way that everybody comes across. And it's just going to be a real interesting little time, so I can't wait to do that tomorrow. Let's see what else we got. That about wraps up all the little general information. But I did want to let you know some of the great PodSafe music that we have coming for you. It's direct from Matthew Ebel. It's a song called Downtown. It's off his new single, or sorry, not his new single. It's off his new album called... I messed this up twice already. It's called Goodbye Planet Earth. Wanted to make sure I got the right one. I said Hello Planet Earth the first time I tried to tape it. I got to get my head in the game here. It's a great song. I'm hopefully you're going to enjoy it. It's found over at the PodSafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. But he would like you to go over to MatthewEbel.com, and I think you're going to actually find a little bit better experience over there. First of all, there's cartoons and there's space. What more could you want, you know? Let's see what else. Oh, yeah, we did want to thank our sponsor here for today's show. This show, as always, is sponsored by GoToMeeting. If you're looking for a better way to present or collaborate during your conference calls, your solution is quite simple: web conferencing with GoToMeeting. During your call, everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com, and your computer screen shows up on all of their monitors. It's like you're all in the same room. GoToMeeting is perfect for sales or product demos, training, or real-time collaboration. Plus, you're not charged a permanent fee like some of the other providers that are out there. You can meet as often as you want for as long as you need with one flat rate. With GoToMeeting, you can meet with anyone, anywhere, anytime without ever having to leave your office. You'll not only end up saving time, but a serious amount of money as well. You can see for yourself, try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/podcast. Like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. And just right now, right as we speak, we'd like to thank Matthew Ebel for sending us the link to this song. This is Downtown off his new CD coming out there. So head on over to MatthewEbel.com and check this one out.
Sell, your daddy gonna raise hell. He gives you money. money, my honey. Your daddy don't give a damn unless you got a Johnny and you go in town.
Technical difficulties have occurred with the hosts of this podcast. Please do not adjust your broadband connection. Thank you.
Imagine a podcast.
You've listened to a podcast. No kidding. An episode of a podcast.
By teenagers.
I'm not a dumbass. I could have done this right the first time.
About technology.
iPhone users, there's an iPhone here? Where?
I've seen a whole bunch of iPhones. He's got one right over there.
About their boring lives.
People are so thinking of skipping out today, but I'm so glad I did.
About nothing at all.
That's all I need to know.
Previewcast, the teenage tech podcast that has absolutely nothing to do with absolutely nothing. Check it out today at previewcast.com.
Again, that was the Previewcast from Previewcast.com. And before the Previewcast, you heard Matthew Ebel's new single, Downtown, from his album called Goodbye, Planet Earth. So hopefully you enjoyed all that. The guys from Previewcast were nice enough to play our promo when we were doing our 2-in-2 promotion for the contest that was recently closed up shop here at the Cafe Nation. So we'd like to thank them incredibly much for going out of their way, playing the promo for us, and we wanted to return in kind. So you are going to be hearing other members of the Tech Podcast Network throughout the next couple episodes, at least. I'm pretty sure I have enough promos to make it through, and I really apologize for the last episode. I just couldn't seem to get the promo together and get what I wanted to talk about. It's like I haven't listened to every single member of the Tech Podcast Network. That's something that's necessarily not a very good thing. But the ones that I have, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm passing along the info for a good show. So it's... You never want to play a promo when you really haven't checked out the show, even recently. And it's like, if you haven't listened to a show in the last couple of months, you want to make sure at least they're still doing the same brand of good. And the guys over at Previewcast are definitely doing some kind of brand of good over there. So hopefully you can head on over there. Again, it's Previewcast.com and check that out. All right, we have a... amazing amount of stuff here in the Tech Cruft section of the Tech Podcast, or not the Tech Podcast, here at the Caffeination Podcast, rather. I am not 100% better. I'm not sure if you can hear it. I can feel it. I can hear it in my voice just a little bit. So I'm going to keep getting rest. I'm going to keep, sallying forth and getting onward here, and making sure I, get myself up to Caffeination standards here. But I just wanted to make sure that you all knew that this is not the 100% Paul. We're probably around 85, maybe 90 right now. But first thing I have up here, I'm just listening to it, is the Verizon data rant. I recently got a brand new phone, Verizon Voyager. Love it. It's unbelievable. It is not a direct competitor to the iPhone. It's the only real touchscreen phone from Verizon. Like, the entire front of it's touchscreen. The thing is that it pops open and has a full QWERTY keyboard in the inside, which I love. I can't even begin to tell you how awesome that is. You can go online with it. You can type email. It's just so much quicker than that T9 texting that, every time I've had one of these kind of phones, I had the original Verizon, the V, and the brick-looking cell phone that when you opened it up had the QWERTY keyboard on the inside. Had that. Loved that. That one died, so... I've been waiting and almost lusting after this phone for a while. So it also comes with this fun little service called Mobile TV, which is interesting, but it's like... It's $25 a month, and it's only maybe 6 or 7 channels. At the same point in time, it's like, you know what? I'm not paying $25 a month on top of my current bill. I mean, if it was like $5 a month, I could see it. I mean, hey, they have Nick Jr. on there. I have a kid. That would definitely zip the lip on the kid. You know, see Dora the Explorer, Go Diego Go or whatever else they had on there. And, you know, that'd be interesting. Yeah, it's a fun little thing. Hey, look at the shiny box. But, you know, no, it's too high of a price point. And a lot of that's the problem with a lot of the Verizon stuff. They're nickel and diamond every single little piece of Verizon. And the thing that, you know, when I canceled mobile TV, they said, okay, well, fine. We're going to be charging you $1.99 per megabit of bandwidth. And my brother-in-law asked me, he said, oh, so you're going to download a podcast on this. So do you realize how much that would cost me? If I was going to download a podcast, my show is usually around 20 megs. That's $40 right there to get one podcast. That's ridiculous. If I had an iPhone, I could download all of them and not have any problems with it. It's like they need to find the unlimited data for Verizon and make it much more affordable. Because right now, if you wanted unlimited data, it's either $15 a month for VCast, and still they don't let you download that kind of stuff. Like it's a very limited unlimited data. You know what I mean? If I had a smartphone, it would still be, you know, I couldn't view streaming media. I couldn't do a whole bunch of different things. There's a lot of stuff out there that, like, it's really cool on the web, and just the phones that Verizon has, or the draconian nature of the network is insane. And this even goes beyond that. Like, let's just say I would go onto VCast, which is their little, or not VCast, I go into, like, the Get It Now feature, which is their little marketplace, and I want to snag myself a fun little application. So I grab a new application, I pay the, you know, $3 to $9 or whatever it is for the new application. I still have to pay the data to download the application. Same thing with a song. If I buy a song on Verizon's mobile network, and I pay the, you know, $2, $3, whatever it costs on there, and I download it onto my phone, I'm charged for the data in addition to the charge for the song. Don't you think you should kind of build the charge for the data into the price of the song? It's just, it's this kind of thing right here which really, really steams me. It's ridiculous in an almost comical sense, and I had such horrible service when I was on Singular, and I've always, and a lot of the people that I are Singular/AT&T/Singular, and all the people that I know have a lot more trouble using their Singular and AT&T cell phones to actually make calls as compared to myself. Like I never have problems anywhere I go, and they're right, it is the network. You know, I can go out there, I can make a phone call, and it's fantastic. They just charge you for every little thing you want to do extra. I mean, every tiny little thing that you think might even be cool. I don't even know. So it's just wanted to get that off my chest and kind of put it out there. You know, just, you know, fair warning. You know, $1.99 a meg. That's an insane bandwidth, and insane. I know some hosting providers that charge you $1.99 a gig for a month for bandwidth. So it's. So we're just going to let that go. We're going to get on to our first real news story of the day. This one's found over at Slashdot, and this is Aboriginal Archive uses a new DRM, which I really don't believe in calling this one DRM. I actually think this is the first culturally sensitive use of new media, uses of a multimedia archive out there. And basically what it breaks down to is the different Aboriginal tribes within Australia. I'm not even sure if tribes is the correct term to use here, but the different groups of Aborigines that are living in Australia have very strict cultural guidelines surrounding who has access to what information. They all agree on one basic thing, that the information needs to be preserved. You need to, you know, have a repository, even if it's online, somewhere where, you know, culture gets saved, somewhere where you can go as a reference point to saying, okay, this is who we are, this is how we function. And this is a completely, you know, internal perspective. This is not another thing here. And this is how they go into it. They say you need to create a user profile to actually access the data. And this is how it works. Men in this culture are not allowed to view women's rituals. They're not even allowed to know what they are. So by proxy, if your profile says you're a male, you cannot view the female's rituals. Fantastic. One community cannot view the material from another community without first seeking permission. Images of the deceased cannot be viewed by their families. I'm not really sure about this, but again, this is a very cultural relevant, very culturally specific taboo within their society. And at the same point in time, it's like it goes on and on and on. Like there's traditions which cannot be computed. There's certain people in the groupings that do not have access to things, both through an egalitarian, age-related structure, and through the gender-based roles that are assigned. And I just think it's fantastic that they have actually built this into the system here. And this is like the first time I've ever seen someone, like, I don't even know if they developed or if it was developed for them. This is the first time I've ever seen a truly culturally relevant use of technology, where it's not just anybody can gain access to everything, which is how a lot of the people in the United States and different parts of the world view it. They say, you know what, everybody should have access to everything. In certain cultures, that just doesn't fly. And in certain cultures, you need to respect that, and this is, again, from me, like, I know I've talked about this before, but I was trained as an anthropologist, so an anthropologist and an archaeologist in college. I've done a lot of work, I've done a lot of reading, I've done a lot of, and it's still like a very, very passionate hobby of mine, although I work in computers, it's still a very passionate hobby of mine, and it really kind of warms me just a little bit to think the people are taking this kind of stuff into context, and maybe you just hope that this is only the start of something better. Just a little bit of cultural relevancy into design for the web. So you need to take other people into consideration when you're doing things, and this goes for everybody. So, for instance, it's not just the explicit and the clean tags that get put on MP3s. It's the fact that people need to understand that there's certain content which is not culturally allowable to be viewed. Like this goes for like Arabic countries where certain things do not go, just do not fly. And I'm not an expert on any kind of the different cultures and the different things you can and can't do within them, but certain things really need to be taken into account. And I think we owe it to ourselves, at least those of us who are in a Western culture, because I know we have listeners from all over the world. I'd love to hear from somebody from some other place to see exactly how they view this. But, I really wish that people around here in the United States would take a step back when they say, oh, I can't believe that people can't view this material in this country. That's so horrible. You need to take an understanding of the fact that that is their culture. If there's people within the within the culture who are struggling to become more westernized or to change the way that information is shared, that's one thing. But you imposing a completely different viewpoint upon somebody else's culture is wrong. There's no other way to look at it, and no matter what you can say about it, it's just wrong. Because you have no basis for doing that without them turning and looking at you and saying, okay, this is exactly why we don't like Americans. This is why, it's like, it's a very, very sensitive topic. And it's one that I really haven't seen dealt with in a very good way until now. So, kudos to the people down in Australia. This is a fantastic idea, and I'm really glad that it's getting off the ground there. And up next, we have something which is a little bit completely a 180 here. We're not talking about cultural relevancy or something like that. We're talking about something that's very much an American idea. The Super Bowl, XLI coming up. Basically, it's for those of you who do not know, and I really don't think that there's very many people out there who don't. But for those of you not familiar with American football, this coming Sunday, the championship between the New York Football Giants and the New England Patriots is being played in, I think it's in Arizona. The sad thing is it never really matters where the game is. It's always this massive media spectacle, and everybody has a whole bunch of people over to watch it. And our house is going to be no different, so I'm going to probably be recording the Caffeination just a little bit early to make sure I can focus correctly on the game and everybody who's over my house. I will, however, be making my fabulous chili cheese dip for the fries and everything, and as soon as I get the recipe down pat, I'm going to be posting the recipe online for all you people who'd like to try that. So I found a fun little guide for how to make sure that you're watching the Super Bowl in high def. This is from Engadget High Def, and I really like the article. I really like the way that they deal with the subject. They're not calling anybody stupid. They're not saying, they're saying these are just common mistakes that you need to make, or that you don't need to make, that you shouldn't avoid, and these are things that you need to understand. So I really give kudos to the guys over at Engadget, because this is, the idea of high def and what exactly is high definition. It's kind of like an amorphous specter. It's like some people say, oh, well, I have a high def TV. I'm watching something in high def. Not always this is the case, especially if you're watching certain cable channels out there. They actually drop frames within movies. If you're looking really closely, it makes them just a little bit jumpier. What it is it actually cuts on the amount of data that they send to the satellite, so it gives them a savings, believe it or not. Still, you want to make sure that you're watching the thing in high def if that's what your idea is. So it's an interesting little take on it. I thought I'd pass it along to you. Up next, we have just a little bit of humor with all the hype and hoopla. And even in work, people are asking me, it's like, oh, did you see the MacBook Air? And I have a tendency to pontificate upon this thing just a little bit, where I sit there and go, you know, oh, yeah, well, you know, here's the major drawbacks. And I really think that, you know, we talked about this a little while ago. You know, I think it's going to be the next Mac Cube. The Mac Cube was a really nice industrial design piece, but that was about it. It was underpowered, and it had a lot of glaring design deficiencies, which other people could see, but Apple didn't. So, you know, the MacBook Air has a couple of glaring, at least in my perspective, design deficiencies. I haven't actually touched one, haven't really seen one. I might have the chance next week, or not next week, the week after, the second weekend, in February, I might actually have the chance to see one if the representative from Apple who comes to our university to visit is actually going to bring one. I mean, that'd be interesting because, I mean, hey, I'm a geek at heart, so no matter how goofy I think the gadget is, I still would love to get my hot little hands on one just to play around with it for a little bit, so I'll give you the rundown if that actually ends up happening. But, you know, that aside, you know, people have taken, okay, so now we have the MacBook Air. Well, what else do we need? Well, we need the MacBook Earth, Wind, and Fire. So the guys over at Device have created a fun little article on exactly how you could conceptualize these three different pieces. First of all, you have the MacBook Earth. It's made out of the greenest materials available. It actually has grass and sod growing on it, and it actually is solar powered, so it's pretty cool. Up next, there's the MacBook Water, which is actually a bottle of water. You pour it out, and it turns into a computer magically. Then the last but certainly not least is the MacBook Fire, which actually comes with a pair of asbestos gloves so you can type on it, but it's so fast it smokes, according to Device. You know, kudos to them. I really love the design that they put into the three of them, because each one is very, very nicely done. So, all right, let's see what else we have next. Up next, again from Device, is the moldable mouse. Now, this takes ergonomic to a whole new level. So, basically, this is a wad of clay with three mouse buttons in it, and it's kind of a conceptual piece in one sense, because, you know, you can turn it into whatever you think a mouse should be shaped. And it's fully functional in any way. You know, it actually is radio controlled, so it's wireless for all intents and purposes. It has a polyurethane and nylon fabric cover over a piece of modeling clay. So it's an interesting idea. And you know what? I've had enough mice in my day where either they're shaped just so that it's, you know, fits perfectly into my hand, I can use it for hours and not have any problems, or you have one where there's just like one curve off, and every time you go and use it, like, squirts out of your hand or just moves the wrong way and it doesn't end up being a good tool to use. So I really like this idea, and I actually think that they need to take this idea and scale it back maybe just a little bit. Maybe not the full mouse being moldable, but maybe just like the outer shell around it so that you can actually form it to your hand, and maybe even set it up that way, you know, to where you could like kind of like memory foam, except find a way to lock it in. So maybe some kind of like electronic pulse that when it goes through it hardens a shell, and you could do it again to free it up. But, you know, I don't know, I'm kind of just, you know, throwing stuff against the wall here, see if it sticks. But all right, now the next thing we have up here is actually a fun little design trip that I saw online. I don't know what else to call this. Is definitely thinking outside the box, you know. And one of the most neglected pieces of a child's life when it comes to industrial design, when it comes to, you know, designing products, is actually the car seat. Almost every single one of them looks the same. They all seem to function the same, and I got to tell you, they all are horrible when you're trying to put a screaming kid into them. And I'm pretty sure there's a couple of people out there who see the same thing. But this is a new take on exactly what a car seat is. And it actually, you know, holds fast to all of the design standards and all of the safety regulations that the federal government have actually put on it. But it's called the Kid Pod by and it's actually a Nest car seat. So there, you know, it's either for infants or for older kids. I don't know exactly how it works, but it's really fascinating to look at. It's basically, if you ever saw one of those old egg chairs where, you know, it was like the shell of an egg and there was like a hole where somebody would sit in the middle of the pod, then imagine shrinking that down and turning the inside orange, and that's what you got right here. I mean, it's interesting, and apparently there's like no straps or something. I don't know how that functions. I don't know how that works. I would love to see like an actual physical demonstration of this. I'd love to see somebody actually using this, and I would like to donate my child just to a fitting, because my child is one of those people who, or one of those little people actually, who loves to scream and carry on and throw himself all over the place. He's a one-man wrecking crew, so I'd love to see what he did to this tiny little egg-shaped car seat. That'd be kind of fun to check out. Now, the next little thing we have up here is, again, I love technology that has a greater good associated with it. You know, on a certain level, the ergonomic mouse has a greater good. On a certain level, the car seat, you know, it's trying to fix a design problem. But, I mean, when somebody takes an element of technology and advances something that makes not just humans better, but fixes glaring problems in society. And there's something, you know, if you've ever met anybody who's had the unfortunate circumstances where they lose a hand or they need a prosthesis or something, the technology for prosthesis is so far behind the rest of our technology that it's really kind of embarrassing when you think about it. We can make a robot walk, but we're just now getting to the point in science where we can actually help a human walk again, you know, with the aid of robotic limbs. I mean, there's so many different things that are out there that, you know, like the prostheses that are available are overly heavy, they're misshapen, they're almost, or in fact, to from what I've heard, they're to a man worse than not having that hand available. So there's something called the eye limb that's out there now. I know, yet another one of those things that uses the ubiquitous eye for something, but I think the most telling thing about this very human-shaped white plastic hand is this statement, and this is pretty much the reason that I actually put it in here. It's from a company called US Touch Bionics, and so they have partnerships all over the world. They've currently fitted around 70 people worldwide with this thing since July 2007, so it's really a new product out there. But one of the people who is a certified prosthetist that they interviewed for this, he said, "This is the first time in my 30 years in the prosthetics business that I truly feel that I felt that I was truly delivering an arm to a patient." So basically, to take that out of you know what he said, it's the first time that he's ever felt that he was giving something back to somebody that equated what they had, you know, in any kind of sense of it at all. So he goes on to say, due to the anthropomorphic aspects of it, the dexterity, the functional capabilities in the eye limb hand, it's in a league of its own technology-wise. So he never thought he would ever see this kind of thing. The only thing I wonder about is the weight, because the one person I know who actually needs a prosthetic hand, he complains about the weight of the currently available prosthesis, that they're all so incredibly heavy that they're actually harder to use than just not having something there. So, you know, if this thing is anywhere near light enough, you know, or weighs around the same as a normal forearm and hand, I mean, this is going to be fantastic. I can't wait to share this with, you know, people. I can't wait to, you know, point this, you know, to this down the line and say, yeah, this was the start of when the prosthesis business actually, you know, started taking into account the people whose limbs they are replacing. It just never seemed to be that certain things were taken into account. Like, for instance, the weight. I know, you know, you can't replace things and, you know, start off the right way the first time around. So I don't know what else to say here. It's really an interesting idea. It's really amazing when you actually look at the different pictures they have and the level of dexterity that they have. They have the hand being shown screwing something in, putting a key in, holding a disc, and putting a disc in a disc drive. I mean, there's levels of articulation in these joints that are previously unheard of, and I just can't wait to see this kind of thing out in wide distribution. So, all right, that about wraps up the Tech Cruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We're going a little bit long again today. My voice is actually feeling a little bit rougher again. We have a couple little things to get you through here with the caffeine and food section, then we'll let you head on your way. All right, and the first story you're going to find over in the caffeine and food section here at the Caffeination number 203, which, by the way, just in case you're listening on the stream over at the Tech Podcast Network, this episode can be found lovingly nestled along with all of its brethren over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. All right, well, first up, we have a fun little article from over at Device. This is the strangest phone, hands down, that I've ever seen. And why is it in the food section, you ask? Well, mainly because it's shaped like a turkey dinner. That's correct. I don't know why the rest of the dinner is actually there, because the entirety of the phone seems to be within the fake plastic turkey leg. However, there is a dinner roll, some asparagus, and what appears to be a baked potato wrapped in aluminum foil. No word yet on how much this thing costs, but I don't know. It's limited edition. It's interesting looking, but most turkey doesn't have a cord coming out of it. So I think it would be a little bit better if maybe the cord went into the plate and there was some kind of wireless deal going on in between the plate and the turkey. Maybe if you'd like to dial, you needed to use the potato instead of just the turkey. I mean, I'd be perfectly fine with the turkey just being the handset, and everything else needed to have a little bit more, you know, function in the design here. But still, you know, that's just the weirdest thing I've ever seen in regards to that. So moving right along here, we have beer bottle goblets. Recycled Sol, Corona, and Grolsch bottles are being used as goblets. And I like this idea. I like the whole idea of reusing, you know, different bottles that are out there. And they're saying, oh, well, you can get your very own beer bottle goblet, and they're selling for $24.95 a pair. Well, I have something a little bit better than that, something that my dad does. My dad's fantastic with stained glass, and he actually does a lot of good work with that. Well, he recently got a kiln. He's actually making spoon rests out of the beer bottles that are consumed in our household. So basically, he melts them flat, and they're really good spoon rests. I recently gave one of them to one of my friends. I have to ask him if he can do something along the lines of this. Maybe just make the little things that the little stands that the beer bottles actually going, because I already know he could cut the bottle, and I'm pretty sure it's just a matter of, you know, grinding the edge. I wonder exactly how much work is involved in doing this, because I would love to have a set of beer bottle goblets, but I'm not willing to pay $25 for two of them. So I just want to kind of pass that along, see if anybody out there had ever seen anything interesting like that. I gotta tell you, I'm a sucker for reusable art, for times when you take stuff that hasn't really that's already ended basically its life cycle in one section, and you completely throw a curveball into it, and you just change the way it's used. And I really like the juxtaposition of exactly what these things are doing. Like, these used to hold the beer that you pour into the glass. Now they are the glass that you can pour into. I mean, that's just, it's a really neat idea. So, all right. Next thing we have up here, yet another neat idea and yet another thing that I was talking to my wife about, and she just kind of looked at me and shook her head. Kind of like, I love you, I know you know that I love you, but you're a bit of a wackadoo. This is called Frozen Smiles. So basically the idea is that it's a rubberized tray that you can use to make ice cubes, except the ice cubes are shaped like dentures. So if you have an older relative somewhere around you that you'd like to kind of freak out a little bit, you can make your own very own denture ice cubes and leave them in glasses around their house. Just kind of freak them out when they melt, or you can put it into somebody's glass in that person's house and watch the fun ensue. Apparently you can't find anybody selling them yet, but I gotta tell you, if they're cheap enough, I would definitely buy one, especially kind of like an impulse purchase. If you're just like walking through the store and you see this is a great gag gift. So denture ice cubes, gotta love it. All right, now the next little thing we have up here is I don't even know exactly what's called. I don't know what's in the can, but I do know that a company is in Germany is now shipping cheeseburgers in cans that are preserved for up to a year. So it's a cheeseburger in a can, complete with all the fixings in there, and it says that I don't even know. It says that it's useful for up to a year. So this is like the spam of pre-made burgers. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like coming out of the can. They have these lovely product shots, but then again, if you've ever been to McDonald's and seen their fries, nowhere near what the pictures make them out to be. The pictures make them out to be this gorgeous explosion of fries into your face, and you kind of get these wilted little, you know, white asparagus laying all over the place as your fries. So for $6, you can have your very own canned hamburger shipped from Germany. I'd like to thank the fine folks at O'Gizmo for finding that one. A couple other people were talking about it online, but this is the first place I saw it, so I had to share the love there. All right, and then the last little thing that we have here from the caffeine and food section is actually a caffeine-related thing. No coffee stuff today. I wasn't able to find a lot of good coffee things today, so sorry if that's what you're looking for. Well, I'll definitely have some more for the next episode, but I don't know if you can tell right now, but I'm nearing the end of the usable life expectancy on my voice for the day, so it's starting to get just a little bit raspy. Not yet quite the Batman that it was before, but still... Apparently, Snickers has decided to get into the energy bar game with Snickers Charged. Of course, they're limited edition. You want to be able to grab one quick. But so from the Mars company, basically each bar contains 60 milligrams of caffeine and 250 milligrams of taurine. Everything I've ever read about taurine just doesn't really say that it's a stimulant in and of itself, but it is made from bulls somehow. So. Not really sure. I think that's actually why Red Bull is called Red Bull, because it has taurine in it, and taurine comes from bulls, but that's about as far as I get. So apparently it smells like a regular Snickers, has the same taste, same texture and everything, but it has a caffeine kick. So, I mean, hey, that's kind of like just popping a Penguin Mint right before you eat a Snickers bar. So I just thought it was kind of interesting, and it seems kind of a lackluster entry into the field. You'd think that they would have done something a little bit differently, maybe changed the form factor of the bar a little bit, gone a little smaller, a little bit wider, you know, maybe have a low and slow variety where it's lower, thicker, and just do something to differentiate it from a standard Snickers. Because if you didn't have the wrapper on, and I know if I'm eating a Snickers or something like that, I pop the wrapper off, throw the wrapper out, and then I'm eating the bar. You need to be able to differentiate just somebody looking at this bar going, okay, you're eating a Snickers Charged. That's what I want. You don't want the wrapper to be the only indication. It's kind of like the Hershey's Dark Chocolate. Looks different. It's darker. You know, you need something to just set you apart just a little bit, and I think it'd be a better idea for them. All right, that about wraps it up for the caffeine and food section. I'd like to thank Matthew Abel for the use of his song Downtown. Thank the PodSafe Music Network as well. Just wanted to give you a little bit of a rundown on where you can find this show and everything else related to it. This show, of course, has been the Caffeination Podcast. And all the interesting stuff related to that is housed over at caffeination.com, www.caffeination.com. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also proudly listed over at blueberry.com. That's blubrry. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts. And last but most certainly not least, the Caffeination is a Puzzle Piece production. So we'd like to just give you a little rundown how you can contact us. If you'd like to send us email on comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to do, you can do so at caffeination@gmail.com. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can dial our listener line, always on, always direct to voicemail, 215-240-1319. And you can Skype me at The Caffeination. There's voicemail over there, too, so it's all free. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. I can't even begin to thank you enough for spending this time with us and continuing to do so. So thanks for listening, everybody. Stay caffeinated, people.